Welcome to WeAreTechnology.com's User Friendly 2.0 with host Bill Sickens, Technology Architect.
And this is User Friendly 2.0. Welcome to the show, Bill Gretchen. Welcome.
Hello.
Hi there.
So I got a great show coming up for you this week. We're going to be talking a little bit about some of the new superhero movies that have come out, and superheroes might be able to fly, but it sounds like these movies are crashing. So we'll get to that and see what the situation is there. However, on a much more positive side of pop culture, we're going to be talking about an exhibition that's coming up here in Portland. Dan Lam is the artist. She is absolutely incredible. And we're going to be looking at that a little bit this week. And we have an interview with her next week to actually go over what she's doing. And then in our second segment, we are going to be doing a Q&A. Everybody's been asking for this, so we're finally going to get to do it. Hey!
Yay! Been a while.
And then some other topics we're going to be looking at for that segment. There's been some stories coming out that large companies are locking out their users for somewhat arbitrary reasons. Google, Amazon, even Apple. So we're going to have to discuss that and see what the deal is with that. And then when the time we have left, we're going to be looking at smart home tech. Now, not that this is a new topic for us, but there's been some other, let's just say, unusual things coming out, and I'll do a little bit of a spoiler alert here. I don't know if any of us need a $480 smart toaster with a touchscreen, but maybe someone does. We're going to be looking at some of these different things, and it's looking like, you know, they usually say necessity is the mother of invention. Unfortunately, I think with some of these components, the necessity is something to sell more than something for it to be able to be used for. All right, check out our new website, userfriendlyshow.com. Launched it about 2 months ago. It is the one-stop place for you to listen to episodes, submit your questions, submit your comments, let us know what you like, let us know what you don't like, and see what is coming up on the show, as well as being able to look at our Tech Wednesday articles and everything else. Userfriendlyshow.com.
Don't miss out on July 1st. We'll be speaking with artist Dan Lam about her upcoming fourth solo exhibition, Cosmic Shake, which will be at the Sheffis Gallery, located in the heart of the industrial southeast side of Portland. This upcoming exhibition will be an exhalation of Dan's mesmerizing sculptures, and this time around, she's elevated the bar to a new height, exploring and creating new shapes and textures. Join us to hear more about Dan's beginnings, journey, and ambitions next week on a not-to-miss episode of User Friendly 2.0.
So what's in the news?
The double-decker airplane seat is back.
Yeah, so in an attempt to make flying even more uncomfortable than Southwest seems to have managed to, they are trying to bring this concept back. And this is not a new thing, but it is something that every other time this has been proposed, everybody's kind of looked at it and just been like, oh, no. I don't think this is very different, except for the fact that they are trying to actually push it. Now, the idea of this is, of course, to fit more bodies on the plane and therefore sell more tickets. And this is done in a staggering thing, and the press release includes a photo of all these happy passengers smiling, and I'm just looking at this like, okay, it's basically you have one set of seats that are floor level like they are now, and then wedged in there is a second set in between each row that sits above the first person.
So I have a question already, because airplanes, there's a weight thing that is always a consideration. So if you have extra people, does that mean less luggage?
I don't think so. Okay, so basically the plane is, from my understanding, not that I'm some kind of an expert on airplanes, but from my understanding of it is the way that they do that is the amount of luggage, passengers, and all of that, there would be a top out for what the plane can physically carry, but what they're really looking at is fuel. So what they actually carry is well under what the maximum weight limit would be. So conceivably, they should be able to do this and not have to minimize the luggage. But, you know, the different authorities. So this was announced in a show in Hamburg, Germany. The different authorities, whether it's the European Union or the United States or whatever, are going to look at this and make sure that, number one, it's safe, weight limits, among other things. The second question that would come to mind is when you're on a plane, you fasten seatbelts, things can happen, and you want to be able to deal with that, and would this create a problem with that? So I think from that standpoint, it's being investigated, but even the concept or idea of this is just something that I'm not sure, you know, they're saying, oh, it's very comfortable.
Yeah, but if you have somebody who is handicapped, how are they going to get in and out easily of those upper ones? And then if there's an emergency, can they can they get people out in time?
So right now there are limits. Someone that's handicapped, for example, is not allowed to sit in an exit row. So it would make sense that they were not allowed to sit on the upper seat. They probably couldn't. So accommodations would have to be made for that. Again, I think there's a lot of questions to be answered here, but I'm just looking at it from a very basic standpoint of it's already like you're jammed into the plane. Would this be something to do? So they're bringing this to the metaverse. And there's actually a thing you can go on to see what it would be like to sit in this kind of a configuration. So, you know, maybe if you want, try that out and let us know what you think.
Fake researcher profiles spread malware through GitHub repositories as proofs of concept exploits.
Okay, so that's a very interesting headline. And if you're not a programmer, it's not necessarily going to make a lot of sense. So let's start at the beginning. GitHub is a system online to be able to save and distribute source code for software, basically. They use it for some other things, but that is the primary purpose. So on GitHub, you have what are called repositories, which are basically different projects, source code for different applications. So as a programmer, if I wanted to write an app for the phone that did something for user-friendly, I might put the source code out on GitHub. The other thing of it is since most software uses bits and pieces that are written elsewhere that you license or get through open source or whatever, GitHub is a place to be able to get to them. So what's happening is there's fake profiles that are attributed to researchers that they're trying to get people writing code to use that are proof of concepts. In other words, software they're trying to prove that it'll work for a given application and include it in your code. But these sets of code actually have exploits to allow hackers or malware to be able to get into legitimate software and be distributed. So that's what's going on there. So from a standpoint of a general user, this probably wouldn't affect you so much. But if you are a programmer, make sure that the software that you're using is real. As of the time of this report, I looked on, I was able to find 7 of these, and they were all still active.
The malware?
The malware, the fake researcher profiles, yeah.
Ugh. Oh, that's not good. Writer's strike passes 50 days. Actor's strike could follow.
Yeah, so if you haven't heard about this, it's definitely something that has been in the headlines, at least on a pop culture movie perspective, in that the writers union has been on strike, is on strike, and has been on strike now. You had to hit 50 days, I believe, on Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
And doesn't show any sign of really ending. What's happening here is
on strike too.
SAG has not gone on strike yet, but they are about to probably.
Okay.
So just and to talk about that, because it's the other part of this story, is it's looking like the current contract with SAG runs out at the end of the month. So July 1st is the first day that they could go on strike, and that is the day that they are planning to go on strike if no agreement is reached for SAG. So SAG is the Screen Actors Guild. AFTRA is another part of that, and those unions are, if you're an actor, you're probably a member of SAG. And the writers union is actually also 2 unions that have gotten together that are trying to, known as the WGA, which are trying to get this resolved. And what's basically going on here, I mean, this obviously comes down to money. It's where it's at, but there's a lot of concerns in this. Number one has to do with AI and some of the stuff going along with that and the idea of needing writers or what happens if ChatGPT or something else, ChatGPT, I can say that, comes up with the script. The other side of it too is that with television changing, so it used to be if you were a writer, you would be hired to write a show. The show would come out, you know, weekly or whatever. And now we don't do that anymore. They're shorter, you binge watch a lot of times, and they're using less writers for less money for a shorter period of time. And then also either not paying residuals or paying residuals that are so low, they might as well be not paying residuals. And I don't know, I'm going to interject. I know this is a news item, but I also just believe writers are a key part, a very important part to all of the media that we consume and like. And they may not be in front of the camera, but I do think it's important because like any other art, you need people to know what they're doing and do it well. And that makes or breaks, in a lot of cases, the rest of movies, television shows, or whatever. So We'll see where this ends up. SAG is a similar situation. And again, technology is playing into this because, like I said, streaming has changed the way that this is being dealt with. AI being able to completely replace characters and are getting to a point now where you can't even really tell the difference anymore. So it's going to be important that all of this gets worked out.
Double 0 day in Chrome and Edge. Check your versions now.
Yeah, so an interesting thing. We had Internet Explorer, which was put to bed a while ago now, and Microsoft Edge took over it. However, Microsoft Edge runs on the Chrome engine, so they are basically, at least at the core, the same browser, the way that they work, and then the rest of the browser is built around it, which is why this zero-day exploit affects both and not just one. And of course, we don't have anything to make this easy, like having a version number that we can tell, you know, would work or that kind of a thing to know what you have. So the best thing to do is just make sure you're up to date. They've both been fixed, but if you haven't pushed updates in a while, you might still have a bad version of one or both. And right now, to figure that out, instead of having to go through and deal with all of this, just make sure you've got the latest version that will fix this problem. We're going to talk a little bit later in the show about what a zero-day exploit even is. This is a listener question that's come in, so stay tuned for that.
How do you check to see which version you have?
You know, that's a very good question. I think we'll cover that in the Q&A too, next segment.
Okay, great. Fans react to The Simpsons reimagined as lifelike characters with AI.
Yeah, so this is an interesting thing. They've taken basically the description from the last, 34 years, 35 years, whatever, of The Simpsons, and have had it recreate the characters as what they would look like in real life in the situation that they're in. So you have the main Simpsons family, Homer, Marge, and the kids. Also Ned Flanders, Patty and Selma, Apu, Smithers, and so on.
I thought Smithers was good.
I looked at the pictures. It to me, it's like kind of scary almost.
I didn't care for the Marge version. And I didn't care for the Apu version. I didn't really feel like it was Apu. But some of the others, I thought the kids worked. I thought the sisters worked, Patty and Selma. So,
yeah, it's I kind of agree with you. And so has the general feedback that Marge is not so much Apu, but Marge as a character kind of wasn't what was expected. but the rest do work. So. Yeah, and this is an interesting thing. You know, we just talked about it a little while ago, but the use of AI across the arts has been controversial. And they're actually adding rules for this right now. So this is more a case study, I think, than anything. But even like the Grammys are now saying that only human creators are eligible to be submitted for consideration and be nominated for a Grammy. So, you know, you look at this kind of a thing, and looking at the pictures is interesting because I don't know if I look at it with a trained eye, I can kind of tell it's AI made, but yeah, it does not look necessarily AI in some cases.
Really? And I thought they kind of did.
Yeah, they kind of do and they kind of don't. Compared to what it would have been 6 months ago, they're a lot better, which means probably 6 months from now, you won't be able to tell anymore. So we'll see.
You see, I thought Apu looked like a used car salesman more than a convenience store clerk. So that's why I wasn't sold on that.
I thought
that
Mr. Burns looked like Mr. Burns, though. I mean, that's about what I would have expected from him.
Kinda, yeah.
you want to hear a story about that, about the AI stuff?
Yeah.
So I can't say any names, but as you know, we're part of journalism. We have friends that are in journalism. I heard from one of my photo editor business friends. He had a new guy come in, hands him a photo and trying to sell it to him. Now, my friend, he's been in the market forever. You know, he's just about the same age as I have. He's been working this job for, you know, he's getting ready to retire, weirdly enough. But a guy walks in, hands him his photo. He takes a look at it and he's like, this is really good, but there's something wrong with it. And suddenly hits him. And he looks at the guy and says, you took this photo, right? Yeah, I took this photo. Well, when did people start having multiple left hands?
Whoops.
Now, in this specific place, he almost threw the guy out a window. So,
right.
That's funny.
And you know, and the thing of it is, though, is as technology develops, there's going to be less and less of that. I know, you know, our Tech Wednesday articles. Now, I do make a note of this, but I've worked with ChatGPT on some of the context. Of course, mm-hmm. In the bottom of the article, I say that I did. I'm not trying to sell it as my own work. But yeah, I can only imagine where this is going to go with stuff like that. The other thing is papers in schools and things. You know, I would have saved some money. I wouldn't have had to hire somebody to write my. I mean, I could have. I mean, some people somewhere might use AI to do this.
I'm making a rude gesture at you.
Well, next section. Lego, our favorite toy company, is poised to enter the quantum computer market.
Yeah, and when I first read this, I'm like, is Lego making quantum computers? Because that would certainly be a change of market. They're making a Lego version of a quantum computer, which is actually kind of cool. It's done after the IBM Q Quantum computer system, 103-piece set. So we'll see if this actually comes out to market. This is one I would like. This is one Jeremy would have liked too, I think. And yeah, you know, it's kind of a cool system if you think about it, what they're coming up with. So we might need to throw a picture of that out on our social media because I don't know, it's just kind of a neat looking thing.
My only problem is Legos have gotten expensive.
Yep.
Oh yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
You know, another interesting thing about this too with quantum computers is it is actually possible to make them modular too. So more means more power. Now the Lego system is just one you put together and it's a toy. But in all reality, if you had some kind of a web or a hive of computers and started putting them together and they were quantum based, it could be like Lego. So, you know, maybe this is a premonition of something that's coming in the future.
Microsoft Activision CEOs to defend $69 billion deal and fight with FTC.
Yeah, this is the third challenge to this. The first one being New Zealand. The second one, I believe, was the United Kingdom. And now the FTC. And I know, Bill, Activision Blizzard is your favorite company for making video games. Do you think this merger is a good thing?
No. I mean, to a degree. But like, Microsoft recently bought up Bethesda. But I haven't seen it really matter yet. It hasn't changed how just bad Bethesda really is at the core. So Microsoft buying Activision could be great. But honestly, I feel like it's just more of the same because the same people are going to be there. And, you know, Activision and stuff was like basically where good games go to die was a statement I heard once.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's
like, Westwood Studios was bought out by them and Command and Conquer is just gone.
Well, and look at what happened with World of Warcraft. I mean, Blizzard, it's like, I have to agree with you on that. And from a nostalgia standpoint, I'm rooting for this to be good for Activision. Activision is a very old video game company. It goes back to the Atari days. And in their day, they did produce good games. But it seems like lately, it's just been very different. And it's a bummer. It's a bummer that it's gone this way. And I'm used to be a very avid World of Warcraft character. Yeah, sometimes I feel like that in life. Player. And the lines did blur with that game. You know, at the end of the day right now, not only are they having problems where, in my opinion, and it sounds like yours too, the software they're putting out is less than to be desired. Even their company culture, there's been claims of sexual abuse with the employees and all kinds of other things. And I don't know, Microsoft doesn't seem to have that problem. So maybe it'll help to fix that. But I don't know. Like you say, I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens here. But at the end of the day, I don't know.
Me either.
So with the writer's strike pushing back a lot of productions, there have been a few movies that have come out. However, I don't know. It seems like the reviews they're getting are not so great. So the two that have been most recent are The Flash and Elemental. And according to the reviews that are coming out on this, the box office opening on The Flash was only $55 million, which is not great for a superhero movie. But Elemental did even worse at 29.5. I don't know. Are superhero movies a has-been, or are we just getting some bad ones? What do you think?
I mean, I hate to say it. The Flash, at least from my perspective, he's there. You know, he's like some of the Green Lanterns. They're just kind of there, and I don't know the difference half the time.
Yeah.
I mean, I know The Flash has a big part in the lore, but it's just, I don't know. I've never really found it to be great.
I kind of like the TV version of The Flash.
Okay.
And I didn't really connect with the one in the movies. So I was kind of disappointed they didn't just grab the TV guy and have him do it.
Yeah, I kind of have to agree with you that I got into the series. I liked it. And most of it was very melancholy somehow, but a lot of superhero stuff's like that. but it was still reasonably well done, you know, and they got the idea across with the metahumans and everything else that's part of that universe. But yeah, the movies, and to be perfectly honest, I'm not sure a Flash movie, I can't think of, I don't know. I've just always liked the television show better on that one. And then Elementals, you know, and it's kind of a hit or miss thing.
I like the cartoons, you know, and it just didn't grab me. And I keep watching the commercials and I keep wondering, why am I not interested in it? And I'm not sure why. It just didn't grab me.
Yeah, I felt the same way.
You know, Elemental, worst opening, $29 million in Pixar history. You know, and the only one that did lower was Toy Story, but of course that was in 1995, so you have to figure in inflation, and with that it didn't do lower. But, you know, and we've been looking this year, this isn't the first thing. I mean, there's been other superhero movies. Shazam! Fury of the Gods came out back in March, I think it was, and it was the same type of thing. It was just, I don't know. The character's a little odd, but even so, the movie, Black Adam was the other one. I don't know. I'm just not running the movie theater yet.
You know, I wonder, because I know in generationally wise, certain superheroes had a bigger predominance of the market previously than they do now. You know, Hulk was kind of big at a certain time, and then there was kind of a lull, and then Hulk kind of came back. Batman has always just been kind of there and a strong forefront. I feel like a lot of Superman has kind of fallen back.
Yeah.
Where, you know, back in the day, it was just Superman was there and Captain America was there and, you know, the big names.
Yeah. And some,
yes, maybe,
you know,
it's kind of an ebb and flow.
Like, Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, that one's doing pretty well.
Yeah.
And so that's a superhero movie, you know, but it's one of the few, and but it does have a lot further of a following. Guardians of the Galaxy is the other one that came out this year, and it's, I guess, been pretty average. It hasn't crashed, but it hasn't been, like, you know, super good either. So,
yeah, and I feel like them, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy is also another one of those kind of niche.
Yeah.
Groups, you know?
Yeah, it fits for a niche group of people that have that certain, you know, they like it, you know. It's kind of like that with the Green Lantern and obviously maybe with Flash.
I mean, I know that's, you know, I don't how know it is with Transformers.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up too. Transformers. I don't know if that qualifies as a superhero, but Rise of the Beasts has come out, and that one also did okay on its opening weekend, but it hasn't held. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting. I'll watch probably most of these when they come out on streaming or, you know, whatever method I get them on, but it hasn't been something that's, you know, I don't know, pulled me back to the theater. So we'll see. And it seems like most of the world is on board with that. Well, anyway, we've got a great show this week and it's not going to crash and burn. So we will see you after the break. This is User Friendly 2.0.
You work hard growing your business, but when it comes to marketing and branding, you simply don't have the time. You need a trusted partner to take on your advertising goals and produce results, whatever your budget and deadlines are. Brian Kelly Digital Media is your trusted partner. We are ready to make your marketing and branding goals a reality. Your time is precious, and so is your advertising budget. Get more bang for your buck with Brian Kelly Digital Media. Schedule your free consultation today at 503-474-7885. That's 503-474-7885.
Welcome back. This is User Friendly 2.0. Userfriendlyshow.com is the place for you to go and get our past episodes, submit your questions, submit your comments, read our articles, and let us know what you think. And from that end, we are going to be doing a Q&A. This is the first time since we've changed our time format, so we'll see how this goes, but I think it'll work. What is our first question?
How do you check your browser version? This is going back to that thing in the first section there where we're talking about the exploits and problems.
The exploits, yeah, and definitely is something good to know. So, of course, they don't work the same way. Chrome and Edge, while they might be built on the same engine, have a little bit different way of getting into that. So if you're on Chrome, you open your browser. In the upper right corner, there's going to be three dots. You click on the three dots and then go to Settings. And then when you get there, one of the last items, or in my case, the last item that comes up on the menu to the left is About Chrome. You click on About Chrome, and you're going to get the version number there. And it will also tell you if you have the newest version or not. So I'm just looking at this. That's what the clicking was as we're going along here. And it says Chrome is up to date. And then it gives me my version official build 64-bit. So that's how you can tell on that. Now, Edge uses a similar way of doing it. But of course, it isn't exactly the same. You open your browser, you again have three dots, but they're going the other way. Click on that and also go to Settings. But then when you get into Settings, you're not going to see anything that there is about. You're going to have some options. But on the upper left, next to the word Settings, there is three lines, not dots. You click on that. And then from that, you can go to the option called About Microsoft Edge. And then that will also take you to a screen kind of like Chrome where it tells you if it's up to date and gives you the version number. So that's how you do it on both of those. Definitely something good to check, especially with these exploits. And if they're not up to date, go ahead and update them.
Do you fear AI?
You know, one of these weeks, we're going to have to see if we can do an AI show or we can all take the week off, although that might mean that we don't come back. So maybe we won't do that. But do you fear AI? Do I fear AI? And I think all three of us should speak to this. I think my answer to that is no, but I do think it is going to be important to watch this technology and make sure what we're doing with it is ethical and everything like that, because it does have, I think, the potential to go off the rails. But, you know, as far as our new AI overlords, I think we're going to end up with some kind of a hybrid human that's actually a cyborg that has AI, and you know, that'll be our overlords, but the AI is for what itself. I don't know. I don't fear it. Bill, I'm going to throw this to you. What do you think? Do you fear AI?
No, I really don't. But I think a lot of people out there don't necessarily know what an AI really is compared to other things. I mean, I know we're going to talk about ChatGPT in a minute, but that's not inherently an AI. It's really just a cataloging system that runs a mathematical computation to figure out what to do. And it's not really an AI. Whereas an AI can think, it can abstract, it can come up with why.
So let me ask you a question. What about some of these reports? And I haven't been able to recreate this, mind you, but it's a rumor that ChatGPT specifically, in some cases, is now answering, no, I'm not going to write your paper. That would be unethical, and has not been programmed to do that.
It's a possibility, but it could also be trained.
Okay. ChatGPT
has been trained to lie, just like a lot of them. There was a case recently, it actually made it a court case out of it, where a lawyer used ChatGPT to do research, and it spilled out a bunch of, what do they call those? Precedents?
Mm-hmm.
The judge and the other, the defense were like, well, you need to go figure out which ones these are because they don't seem to exist. And that was because it just made them up.
Right, wow. Right. Yeah.
So
I got to watch it on these things. And that is very true. Gretchen, how do you feel about this?
I don't think I necessarily fear the AI. I would be more concerned about how humans use AI and manipulate it to do nefarious things.
All right, and then on to that front, Bill, have you used ChatGPT? Do you use it? Do you like it? What do you think?
I actually haven't touched it myself. I've watched a number of videos about what it is, you know, and I mean, it is a very complex thing. And yes, even the creators say there are parts of it that they don't understand why it does what it does. But again, I don't think it's an AI. But you are talking about, what was it, like a 128-dimensional creation, but it is just... The way it works is it basically takes a word, converts it to a number, and then those numbers, it connects to basically four or five different things to figure out what would be the most possible next one. Things like context, things like how many are these used together, that sort of thing. So it's really just running probability and odds.
So Gretchen, have you tried it out yet?
No. No, Alexa is the only one that I've interacted with.
And this is a little bit, you know, and I think the next question from there would be, I'm noticing that there is a plugin for AI photo manipulation in Photoshop now that you can get in other places. So it isn't limited to just text either. There's definitely different aspects. So, you know, from that standpoint now, and I'm going to answer this too. I've talked about this earlier. I've used to do some research, some of our written stories. The other thing that I found this to be very useful for is looking up how to program certain things. And you can ask it, you know, like how in PHP would you do this function, and ChatGPT will answer. And in all of those cases, it's been quite accurate and definitely saves looking things up. And in some cases, it's given me a different way to think about writing certain computer codes. So, you know, I from that standpoint, it's been okay. But yeah, so interesting. So ask this out to our audience. Have you used ChatGPT or some of the other ones that are out there? And what do you think of it? And what do you think of the idea of an AI-driven search? Google and Bing are going in that direction, where instead of just returning results, it's actually AI-driven. So it does other things where it brings back a little bit different format than what you might expect. Have you experienced that? Let us know what you think. All right, what do we have next? What's our next question?
What is a zero-day exploit?
Yeah, and this is a good question, considering that we were just talking about the zero-day exploits with Chrome and Edge. And Bill, you've worked in some programming. Do you want to give a whack at answering this?
The basic of a zero-day exploit is something that is basically a hole from the beginning. So, you know, the day something comes out, like the first iteration of Chrome, let's say, that we're going to those. These are things that have been there since the beginning. Now, whether they've been found, whether they've been used, those are different subjects. There are companies that are out there that do nothing but try to source those out and report on them, try to fix them. And some zero-day exploits literally are just unpatchable, to be honest, because of the way that the coding works.
Yeah, and that's the whole thing. And that's, I think, one of these reasons why it's such a kind of a big deal when they're found, because it's like it's already there, as you say. It's just someone's figured out how to deal with it. And yeah, you're right. There's been some cases where these type of things either can't be fixed or they aren't fixed for whatever reason. Chrome and Edge, they've been able to patch it, so that's good. But there are other products out there that have exploits that, like you say, based on the way the system is, can't be fixed. And those are the ones that can become a real problem. In some cases, they can eliminate something from being useful just because it's not secure. And we've seen some of these things with, like, backend encryption for websites as a example. There's different versions of the security certificates, and the first two have been completely done away with because they couldn't be fixed. And the current version we have, at least for since it's been out, has been secure. So, you know, that's what we're using. And the other ones have just kind of been done away with. And they're actually given version numbers, TLS being one example of that. But the old versions, the ones that are considered exploitable, that they can't fix these things, are completely different and have just been, they're no longer used, they're no longer supported.
But I mean, to point it out, Windows had zero-day exploits. You know, everything tends to have it. Nothing's perfect.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of how damaging it is.
Yeah, and what you can do and what it's for, you know. In the case of the browsers, it's remote code execution, and that's a bad one because that means in the right environment, a hacker can actually run software on your computer without you knowing about it. So that's kind of a big deal.
I remember on one of the Windows, it was you had to be there with the machine, though, and use a USB key. So you couldn't remotely access it. You had to access it directly to get the passwords off. But that was, you know.
Yeah, nevertheless, if you're still, you know, it's a security thing. Cars have a lot of this too. With if you're physically in proximity to the vehicle, their computer systems, you can use zero-day exploits that haven't been fixed for whatever reason. One of the ones we talked about recently was the ability to break in through the headlights, because the headlights are connected to the car's computer, and if you know how to do it, you can get into the bus and open the car and start it, you know, from a headlight. So, yeah, and it depends on what it is, like you say, and what kind of a problem it actually creates.
Has the Amazon Key program been secure?
You know, it's interesting. When this first came out, I think now 2 years ago, it has kind of been, you know, we talked about this. So anybody that doesn't know what this is, so we should probably start there. Amazon Key is a program that Amazon's had for a while now. It's designed to combat porch pirates. And what it is if you have a smart lock or a garage door opener, or in some cases, certain kinds of cars, you can share codes with Amazon, and the Amazon driver can open your garage, house, or car trunk, be able to put the package in there and secure it. So from that standpoint, yeah, you know, hey, it secures the package. However, the Amazon driver is now has access to your house, car, or garage. And the way that these works is, in addition to that, you have to have a camera set up so it's all on camera and some other things. But nevertheless, there is a certain amount of, I don't know, security concerns that this has created. However, in doing the research from this listener's questions, I haven't found anywhere, at least, where this has been hacked or there's been any major problems with it. So, you know, I don't know. Has it been secure? It would seem like from the research that we've done, it's reasonably secure. I'm still not sure that I'm comfortable with that. And I have one of those boxes at a mailbox store where I get my stuff delivered. So it's secured by a human. And that seems to have worked very well for the last 4 years. So I think I'll be sticking with that, but I can't find anything here really to pick on that there's been some huge problem with this.
Hey, is Bitcoin back?
Well, I'm not sure it was ever completely gone. So, you know, and this bounces around. As of recording this segment, it was just on the heels of $30,000 again for a Bitcoin. So that's still half of its high point a while back, but that's still a lot better than it's been recently. And the government's putting in a lot of regulations on cryptocurrency and that type of a thing, which I think is, I don't know, at the end of the day, I think it's going to cause it to stay lower, but it might help make it a little more stable. I don't know. I'm still not investing in crypto. It just hasn't been a thing that I found to be that interesting or particularly safe.
Yeah.
And I still give the opinion that if you're going to buy crypto, that's fine, but use the same money you would use to play the slots in Vegas. Don't use your rent money on it.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of the day, it's just one of those things. So yeah, send us your questions and we will continue to deal with them here. And speaking of things like Amazon, this is a story that came out and was one that we were going to include in the news last week. And then when I started doing the research on it, there's a lot more going on here than what it essentially just is. And it's this idea. Okay, so basically to give the context of where this came from, is there was a claim that's been made. I haven't been able to get any kind of verification from Amazon or anybody else on this. But the claim that was made is a delivery driver drop packages off and a smart doorbell said something that the driver didn't like. And as a result of that, he turned around and locked out all of their smart tech. And then when they got home, they weren't able to turn their lights on and do other things that use those devices. Now, looking at this, there's a similar parallel story with Google that a user took a picture of his child, who I believe at the time was two, naked to send to the pediatrician. And this was all, you know, nothing weird. It was just so the doctor could look at I think it was a rash or something. And Google ended up locking him out of all of his emails and cell phones accounts, saying that he was dealing with child pornography. So the question here is this kind of a thing. Is this something that should even be allowed? It certainly is possible that if the big tech company decides they don't like something about you, that they can actually disable the technology, reach into your home or phones or that type of a thing. And the problem that this kind of creates is, from one standpoint, they couldn't turn on their lights and stuff in their house. From the standpoint of Google, they locked out their email and they were on Google Fi, a service that we use too, and turned off their phones. So now all of a sudden you can't reset passwords, you can't get your email, and you can't make a phone call.
So I have a question. I have a question for the Google Fi one, because it's like, well, shouldn't, instead of locking them out, shouldn't they have called law enforcement?
Well, and I believe that's what they did ultimately. But the system, Apple has one like this too, has algorithms in it, if you want to call it AI or whatever, that what it does is it looks at content and then it will automatically tag certain things. So when you take a picture on your phone and you save it, eventually gets to the cloud, and that's where this stuff is analyzed. And law enforcement was notified. Law enforcement, from my understanding, and again, trying to get details on this has been somewhat sketchy, But law enforcement looked at it and it was determined that it was not child pornography. It was that he was trying to send a picture to a medical provider, which is not an illegal thing to do, obviously. And nevertheless, I can't even find information that says he got his accounts back from Google. If he did, it hasn't been published anywhere I could find. And, you know, again, at the end of the day, while this was happening, the people had contacted Google and they apparently weren't a lot of help. Now, neither Google or Amazon has replied to any request for comment that I've made on this. Apple sent me everything back that they don't talk to the press. Okay. So a pretty generic comment there. But yeah, I mean, you know, at the end of the day, who gets to make the determination? The Amazon driver? I mean, specifically where this is going is he claims the doorbell made some kind of a racist comment. The owner saying it didn't, it was misunderstood. No one's been able to identify which side of that's the case. But even if the Amazon driver didn't like what the doorbell said, should he have the authority to turn off their house?
Well, the details I remember on this one was that the guy was not home, so there was nobody home. The doorbell is set to like one of those automatic, like somebody walks up and there's motion, and it says something.
Right.
There's video from that doorbell that shows the driver coming in. He's got headphones in. The doorbell goes off saying, "Can I help you?" And the driver's walking away. Now, what actually did was the driver then reported, you know, a customer being unruly or you know, whatever was said. And then Amazon up the chain without warning, just all accounts. And so, you know, just banning him from having deliveries, things like that. No warning email saying this is what we're going to do.
And the question that I would ask is, you know, from that standpoint, from what you're saying, which is a little more information than I had, it sounds like nothing was said. But let's say the doorbell did say something that was monstrous. You know, should the Amazon driver have the authority to act on that? I mean, in all honesty, is that even a thing that we want big tech to be able to have control over?
I don't think it should have gone beyond what it was. You know, I mean, if it's a UPS or postal service and something like that, you know, you just... the client doesn't get their mail or their packages anymore, you know, or they have to go pick them up, or they get a notice saying we're just not delivering to you anymore. You know, I mean, I think they used to do that for if there was a dog that was too aggressive.
Yeah. Yeah. Post office still does that. If they can't get to the mailbox or if there's a problem or if the delivery person's harassed, you know, they have that authority, but that's not reaching into their home and disabling stuff, you know. There's a huge difference of reaching into their phone and turning it off in the case of Google.
Exactly. I think that is a massive overstep.
And again, you have no authority. See, the other thing of it is in the legal system, you have the right to, if you're accused of something, to go to court, challenge it, whatever the case may be.
Yeah, exactly.
That doesn't seem to be the case here. There's no Amazon court, let's say.
They're judge, even if there jury, was, and sure executioner.
Because that's the other again, thing. Gretchen?
They're judge, jury, and executioner.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
And see, here's the fun part. And I want you to think about this with the Amazon one specifically. Not only does he have access to the videos of what was happened, Amazon themselves had access to his videos. So they could know literally every person that walked up to his door, go in there and look at it and go, oh, well, yeah, I guess there was nothing that happened.
Right. Right.
You know, because they're not manipulated. They're not.
So they have that ability to know. Yeah, there's audio too. So it's just, yeah, so let's see. What do you guys think about to our audience? Think about all of this, and does it make you kind of wonder? You know, what should there be regulation on this? I mean, you know, getting the government involved isn't always the solution either. But at the same token, there is a Facebook court in a sense. I mean, these things do exist with these bigger companies, and is that okay? And is that something we want? Well, anyway, speaking of smart tech. On another side of this, there's been some unusual devices that have come out again, too. And this is kind of a little more lighthearted. But we'd said in the opening, there's actually a $440 toaster, two-slice pop-up toaster. It has a touchscreen. It goes online. Do we need a $440 toaster? I've decided I don't.
Now, I don't think the toaster was all that useful, though. The mirror, I thought, was fascinating. The mirror could be almost like a morning assistant, where you could get maybe emails or text messages or something.
Isn't that something that they've been marketing that as?
Oh, yeah. No, that's part of that product. And it's definitely a thing. There was a test product put out for Alexa that was a camera that would go in your closet and she could tell you if you look good that day or not.
Yeah, I like the mirror idea.
Yeah, the mirror shows information and is a display as well as a mirror, which I think is kind of cool. I've seen that built into glass too, like in windows and things, where you get up and you have your weather report. It's in a screen in the glass. Now, what about a fork, a smart fork that tracks how many calories you eat, how fast you chew, and then gives you advice on how you could eat better? What do you think of that?
Superfluous.
It seems like there's some serious problems with what they're marketing, because I don't know how the fork is exactly counting how many calories, but, you know, I've seen a spoon that supposedly makes food taste better when it just electrocutes you. Huh. So
I'm not sure I want to be electrocuted while I eat. If I come up with a way to plug in and recharge, that would be fine. But I'm not sure about the fork. And another one on the smart toothbrush. It's a similar idea. It tells you if you're brushing your teeth right. Now, I could see a little bit more to that maybe, but still, it seems a little weird.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll be honest, a toaster? You know what I want for a toaster? I want a toaster that I can see through, so I can see it toasting. You know, I'm going to be honest about that.
That would be cool.
I want to be able to really see it toasting, but I can't find one, apparently.
Now, the closest thing I was looking at there, they have some interesting products. There's a Star Wars toaster that you, it's your choice. There's a switch on it, so it's Empire or Rebel. But you get the logo in the side of your toast.
Oh, yeah, that one's cool. I almost bought one of those.
So, you know, Darth Vader's toast. Going from there. Yeah, the one that we always pick on when we talk about this, too, is the smart toilet. They are still out there. They are still $7,000. Music, ambient lighting, an automatic bidet, heated seats, auto flush. I don't know. And I'm a tech person, but I don't have that.
I feel like it's a very Japanese product. I mean, they have amazing bathrooms. I'm sorry. I mean, this is true. They have some of the most impressive public technology. Toilets you've ever seen. I do agree with you
on that. Yeah, some of the high-end stuff, some of the robotics coming out of Japan are amazing, too. So, you know, from that standpoint, I get the impression, and not to go down a rabbit hole here, but I do think the Japanese people love technology. I've noticed
they
that.
Do.
And it's really cool, some of the things that we see coming out of Japan. However, I still don't think I need a toilet to talk to me or sing to me or anything like that. The smart shower, on the other hand, it's $9,000 plus all the electrical changes you have to make. You know, having a screen in the shower and music and all of that kind of stuff. The camera's a little weird, but...
yeah, that's a little much for me.
Yeah.
So supposedly it's a camera for sensing the environment around you and not a camera, but I don't know. I do draw the line at that. I don't have smart speakers with cameras in bedrooms. It's just weird.
Yeah.
To me, but you know, the rest of it's kind of cool. You can set the temperature, do all these kind of things. It has a whirlpool. It does require running two 220 lines back to your circuit breaker panel, so the installation of this would be quite expensive.
Seriously? Wow.
Yeah, okay. One for the heater for the whirlpool component of it, and then the other one runs all the motors.
Wow. I mean, I can't think of. I mean, washer and dryer both run that back, and I don't think one of my welders even runs that back.
Yeah, I'm looking at, you know, you'd have to have room on your panel. Plus, I don't know, 220 in the shower. There's something about if anything goes wrong with that, that could be a bad thing.
That sounds like a death sentence.
120 in the shower is a problem anyway, but
yes.
You know.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just, you know, I mean, it's a big deal to even have a light above the shower. You have to make sure that's done safely. So in any event, we'll have to see there. What kind of tech, you know, do you find where it crosses a line? I don't know. My favorite one from that list, I think, is the smart animal feeder. That one I kind of liked. You have a camera, you can talk to your pet, and you can give them treats remotely from your phone. You know, if my cats would have loved that. So I don't see anything wrong with that, as long as you don't mind spoiling your pet, which I evidently didn't.
You tried to do that.
Yes. And quite successfully. Remember Snowball?
Yes.
Anyway. All right. And with that, let us know what you think about all of this. Userfriendlyshow.com. And until next week, this is User Friendly 2.0, keeping you safe on the cutting edge.
User Friendly 2.0 is copyright 2023, User Friendly Media Group, Inc. All rights reserved. Views expressed on this show are those of the host and not necessarily User Friendly Media Group, Inc. or this station. Music licensing by BMI. Hosting and technology provided by WeAreTechnology.com. Listen at theanswerportland.com, userfriendlyshow.com, or wherever you listen to podcasts.